Welcome to Grounded Wellness, your go-to podcast for simplified and trusted information on how to live a more non-toxic and holistic life. We're your hosts. I'm Bethany McDaniel, founder of Primally Pure, biohacking enthusiast and mom of three.
And I'm Courtney O'Connor, holistic esthetician with over 15 years experience in the healing power of touch and holistic skincare rituals.
If you've ever felt curious about where your clothes come from and why it matters, this episode is for you. While most of us have heard of fast fashion, it's something that feels easy to brush off. We've all been guilty of caving to the latest trends and styles at a suspiciously low price point. And today we're going to discuss the opportunity to impact ourselves, others, and the planet through regenerative clothing. Our guests today, Otis and Christy Dawn Bushkausis, are the husband and wife co-founders of the farm-to-closet brand Christy Dawn. We discuss their journey of creating a regenerative clothing line, the impacts of fast fashion, and why relationships are key to a life well lived. Let's dig in. Christy and Otis, thank you so much for making the trek out to the farm. Let's dive right in. Tell us the Christy Dawn story. How did you guys create this amazing brand?
Start.
Yeah. So Christy Dawn started as a hobby. I moved to LA when I was 18, started modeling, and I used to thrift and vintage shop a lot. And I would buy these thrifted dresses and I would take them to my tailor and I would basically like redesign these dresses that I would find at thrift stores, and I would go to set and I would get compliments on these dresses that I would kind of recreate with my tailor in Santa Monica. And this all stemmed from growing up in a really small town, and my mom and I, we would go thrifting because it was the only place to go shopping. And my mom loved to sew, and so she would take these dresses or blouses or jeans, whatever it was that we could find, and she would fit them on my body, and sometimes we would change the shape of the sleeve or add some buttons. And so my love for creating intricate, unique pieces stemmed from my childhood with my mother. So Christy Dawn started with me basically saying I want to start a dress company, but I really just wanted to make dresses for myself to wear.
Yes.
And at the time, Otis had a hat company.
Okay.
And I came home from a photo shoot and I was telling him about this grand idea of starting a dress company without having any idea of how to do it. And Otis turned around in his little swivel chair at the office and was like, "I'll help you do it. Let's do it."
Wow.
And then 3 months later, we launched Christy Dawn.
3 months? That's yeah. So quick.
Otis is amazing. Once you give him something, he's like the fire in this business. Like, you give him the idea and it will happen. Like, he's the driver of the idea.
Yeah, and you had probably been seeing her do this and seeing how much she loved it. So did it just click with you instantly when she came to you with that idea?
Yeah, I mean, I had a hat company before. A Russian winter hat company in sunny Southern California that I hated. I don't want to go
Russian
down that.
Hats.
I don't want to go down that road for too long, but let's just say I'd cut my teeth. I'd learned about what doesn't work, and what doesn't work is not believing in something, right? Especially as an entrepreneur, you know this.
You like, didn't believe in the Russian hats? You weren't hard, passionate
it's
about
hard,
them?
Hard to get
they
too
were
passionate about them.
Huge, furry, synthetic fur, like bright, bold colors.
Who was the target customer for these?
NFL fans. So we put NFL logos on the hats. It's
okay.
It's a longer story.
Genius idea. Like, it's a smart idea.
It's a longer story that we don't need to get into, but let's just say that I cut my teeth on what not to do. Hmm. And that's so valuable, right? Like, you know, at least one step not to take. And that step was really around like believing in what you're doing. So like, I would never wear a Russian winter hat in Southern California. So it was really hard to have a company selling these things. Now, granted, if I was in Green Bay, maybe I'd be wearing those, but I wasn't wanting to wear them. So it was really hard to do it.
So funny, because my husband also had a hat company, but it was totally sounds similar to what you were describing, like an opportunity based, not passion based.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he had a friend that was doing these and selling them on Amazon. They kind of went in together and it didn't flop per se, but he just completely lost interest in it and it kind of fizzled after a while because there was no passion.
Yeah, exactly. And as you know, like, you start a business and you're going to hit a lot of dead ends.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's going to be times you're like, this doesn't work. And if it doesn't work and you don't believe in it,
it's
really hard to keep going.
Yeah.
But I saw the way that people stopped her on the street and asked her what she was wearing. And so I knew that she had this gift for designing really beautiful things.
Yeah.
So you have Christy wants to make beautiful dresses, and I'm flat broke. I just want to make rent. That's where we're at. That's
and I
want to,
real quick,
yes.
For anyone who is unfamiliar with you guys and unfamiliar with your story, Otis, one survivor in what year was that?
2006.
Okay. So you had had quite a few very like different, unique types of life experiences at this point.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So 2006, I won $1 million. I start my hat company right around the same time.
With your winnings.
With my winnings. I lose all of that money.
Oh my gosh.
Or I don't even want to say lose. I spend all of that money on this really interesting alternative education called Life. And she...
The best education there is.
And just as this is happening, someone comes to me and is like, we want to buy your hat company for the price of your inventory. And I was like, great, perfect. Get me out of this thing. Let's start fresh. So we start this and she wants to make beautiful dresses. I want to make rent. Like, let's get that. That's the important part. We're not trying to make a difference at the global level, even the local level. She just wants to make beautiful dresses. I want to make rent. And we don't have much money. I don't have any money. She's got $20,000 squirreled away from her modeling career. So that's our budget, like, to start this thing. We have $20,000, which, as I'm sure you know, is not that much to start a company. And so we don't have enough capital to go to a fabric supplier and say, like, hey, we want to buy some fabric from you, because they're going to say our minimum's 1,000 yards, and it's, even if it was $2 a yard, there's $2,000, and that's 10% of our budget. We don't want to do that, right? We don't have the customer base yet to support that. So our best choice financially was to use something called dead stock fabric, which is the excess fabric from other clothing companies. And the reason that there's so much excess fabric is that it costs a whole lot for a clothing company to carry raw goods than it does to miss opportunities on the back end with sales.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot hanging around. And so Christy and I decided, hey, this is a great way to start our company using dead stock fabric. And it, like I'm saying, it was not because it was better for the earth. Let's just say that. It was like, it was what we could afford.
It was super affordable, and it also really hit my creative outlet. Like, I could make 5 of this dress and then it's done. Like,
yes.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
Or depending on, you know, we made 20 of something because we found 50 yards. So it was really fun creatively because I could just kind of make whatever I saw and found. It was very spontaneous. And
the assignment for Christy was like, make what you want to, what you'd like to wear.
Right.
And so she's already got this like thrifting kind of mindset of like little gems. So dead stock's the perfect solution.
Yeah.
Right. So we get to this place called Rag Finders. It's on San Pedro. It's 4 stories tall. It's like half of a city block. And it's pallet after pallet after pallet of fabric, all different prints, all different weaves, knits, you know, polyester, cottons, linens.
Super overwhelming.
Yeah, I was going to say, was it overwhelming
or
was it
exciting? It's a headache.
Yeah.
It was both. It was overwhelming and exciting.
It was a headache for me. I was overwhelmed.
We don't know anything about the fashion industry when we started. We're like, I'm like, I just want to make beautiful stuff. Like, will this work? What is this fabric? I have no idea.
And were you paying attention to like natural versus synthetic fibers at the time?
Not necessarily.
We were, in the sense that we were definitely not into polyesters.
Yeah.
Like that was the limit. The limit was like no polyesters, no synthetics.
But not to the point we are now, obviously.
Nowhere near where we are now.
Yeah.
I think we were like, all right, rayons work. And just, you know.
The drape of a rayon was very nice, easy. It worked for so many different silhouettes and body types. Like, we would definitely.
And is that a blend of natural and synthetic?
No. So what rayon is, it comes from eucalyptus trees.
Oh. Yeah.
And then it's in this closed loop system is how they process it. So calling it a natural fiber is a bit of a stretch, but it's not a synthetic fiber either.
What does closed loop system mean?
It means that the chemicals used to process that fiber are in a closed loop, so they're not just getting like spilled out into the.
Okay.
Into the environment, right? You're keeping them.
So then is the problem the chemicals that they use? If it comes from a eucalyptus tree, that sounds really nice.
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, once it's like anything, right? It's like so much of of like plant-based foods are so highly processed that they become not great for the body. I think anytime you heavily process anything.
Okay, so heavily processed eucalyptus trees.
Yeah. There you go. Think about it like
equals
that.
Equals rayon.
So, yeah, so we started there. We started with these dead stock fabrics, but being in that space and seeing all these fabrics sitting there, it begged the question, where did all this come from? Mm-hmm. You know? And I think that was
overwhelming in that sense.
It was overwhelming, but it also was like, where did it come from and why is it here? Why is there so much fabric sitting here that's been sitting here for 30 years? And so just with a little bit of digging, we quickly discovered that fashion is the second largest polluter on the planet as an industry.
Right behind oil and gas, right?
That's right. That's right. And so like any good half-ass marketer, when Christy released these beautifully designed dresses that were five of a kind, we also told the story of Deadstock, which is we're not contributing to fashion's footprint. We're using the excess of these other brands. This is sustainable. And I don't know if by definition it would have qualified as sustainable, but that's how we posited it to our community. And when we released the initial set of dresses on December 27th, which by the way, if you're gonna start a company,
it's the worst time.
Not the greatest time to do it. You want it usually before Christmas, but we didn't
know much, you guys. We didn't know much.
It wasn't that we didn't know, it was just things take long, right?
Yeah. You probably planned for it to be sooner,
totally.
Than never late.
Yes, exactly.
So we release it and the response is incredible. People really love our designs, they love our dresses, but they also really are responding to the story of Deadstock.
Yeah.
They're responding to the calling of like, hey, this is better for the earth. And I think, I can't speak for Christy, but Christy can speak for her and she's right here. But for me, it was the first time in my adult life where I had done something that I benefited from, that I also felt good about the impact that it was having outside of my own personal circle.
Yeah.
And it really invited us to keep pulling the string.
Yeah.
You know, of like, whoa, what does this mean?
Yeah, and it also just like started our exploration around the fashion industry.
Right.
Like we entered into that four-story building of fabric and you're like, whoa, what is this all about? And then, you know, later we start making the clothing and we're like, can we meet the sewers? And the woman we were working with at the time is like, oh, no, you don't want to go there. And we're like, what? Yeah, we want to meet the people that are making the clothes. And she's like, no, you can't go there. And then that was another question for us. Like, well, why can't we go there?
Yeah.
And, you know, then we started noticing that all of the sizes were different within an inch or half an inch. And I was like, wait a second, this seems so strange. So then, you know, it just started, we just started
questioning
everything.
A lot of questions
everything.
In your mind. Yeah. Yeah, and now you guys are going beyond sustainability and you have regenerative clothing, which we'll get into in a little bit. Can you just quickly touch, though, on the difference between sustainable and regenerative?
Yeah, absolutely. Do you want to do this, sweetie?
I'll try my best to explain it. So I like to look at sustainable as a flat line. So if you look around, it's like, we want to sustain something. It's you're not doing anything better for it. You're not hurting. But you're just sustaining a flat line. And when you think about regenerative is healing. So whatever you're doing, you're healing the soil, the biodiversity, the people, the customer, yourself.
Yeah, the system. We talk about that too with regenerative livestock farming, like the farm we're on right now. Like sustainability is treading water, but unfortunately it's sustaining a broken system.
Exactly.
Whereas, like you said, regenerative is actually improving the soil and then in turn what's being grown on the soil and then people utilizing those products.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think for us, you know, we have two small kids and we're looking around and we're just like, what are we doing to actually improve this place for our children and for their children? And, you know, we had to ask ourselves that question, like, do we want to sustain mass extinctions and wildfires and flooding and so much more? Or what can we actually do in this industry of fashion to actually heal? And brings us to our regenerative clothing.
So before we fully dive into regenerative clothing, I want to talk about the fashion industry as a whole. I have a pretty crazy stat here that an entire garbage truck of clothes is being burned or sent to a landfill every second, and we waste enough clothing to fill 1.5 Empire State Buildings every day. Wow. So obviously we're doing something very wrong in how we produce and consume clothing. For anyone unfamiliar with the concept of fast fashion, can you guys explain how fast fashion came to be and just how it developed?
Yeah, I mean, I'm no historian, but basically titans of industry figured out that, like, all right, we have this global commodity called cotton, and for many fashion brands, the markups are quite impressive, right? Mm-hmm. To start a fashion company is actually very risky. There's so many failures. But once you get to a certain point, especially if you're an extractive brand, the margins become great. So the titans of industry were like, hey, this is great. Here's what we can do. We can get people to buy things that they don't need because there's this glut of cotton on the market. And so rather than having people wear the same shirt, you know, for 5 years, what if, or the same dress for 5 years, what happens if we can just convince them that they need to buy a new dress every week or and can't wear the same things over and over again? And it's all rooted in the extraction and the exploitation of humans and planet to create really low-cost garments that are sewn really quickly by people who are usually making slave wages. And typically on these garments, you have a really low stitch count as well, because you can go faster, right? So the sewing machine, you know, you're zooming through and you're only, so there's this planned obsolescence. They're designed to break down. They're oftentimes using synthetic fibers, right? So it started with cotton, but then it moved to, like, oh my God, polyester, which is derived from these oils and these petroleums. Oh my God, we can make it for even cheaper. So you have your Zara's and you have your H&M's and you have your Target's and you have all this.
Have you heard of the brand Shein?
Shein is the worst.
I've read something that they produce 10,000 different designs a day.
I cannot even imagine.
Have you been on their site? It is
I've never been.
It is so bananas. Also just energetically when you go onto that site, you're like, what?
So bad for the
happening?
Nervous system.
Exactly. Like my nervous system immediately dysregulates getting on there.
Yeah. So you have these systems where people, you know, these companies, I believe one of the richest men in the world is the owner of Zara, right?
Wow. Like makes sense.
It becomes incredibly profitable, and because they're doing scale. They're doing tons of scale, and then, you know, the culture begins to accept the prices as, like, normal, mm-hmm. right? Oh yeah, $15 for a dress, that makes sense.
And not if you're following the trends and, you know, right. disposing of things and getting new things all the time.
It's the only way you could possibly do it, right? Exactly. So that's kind of the lay of land, is that people expect clothing to be really, really cheap. People have no relationship with where it comes from. Oftentimes the brands themselves have no relationship of where it comes from either, right? They don't even know who they're extracting or who they're exploiting. And that's part of the problem with these supply chains, is that it's so commoditized that the exploiters themselves have this almost firewall between...
Disconnected.
Yeah, between what's actually happening to the earth and the actions that they take.
Working that way, you have to be disconnected.
Yeah,
because once you become connected to the people who are making your garments, there's no way to treat
keep doing it
like that. Exactly.
Have you guys seen the true cost of fashion? Mm-hmm.
It's so heartbreaking. That was
the first time I became aware of the corruption, mm-hmm. just the impacts on so many levels of big fashion. And sadly, I think there's kind of been just dead noise since then. I think it made a bit of a splash, mm-hmm. if I'm remembering correctly. And since then, it just doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of talk about the fashion industry and the negative impacts health-wise and on a human level.
Yeah.
You guys are, of course, doing an amazing job of raising awareness. Clothing doesn't come with an ingredient list like food does. So we're seeing so much awareness about corruption in the food industry right now and the problems with big food companies. And I think it's easy to see, like, oh, there's red dye. There's all these chemicals I can't pronounce. Like, yeah, it makes sense that I wouldn't want to be putting this into my body. But with clothing, you don't see all of that.
That's right.
And I read that, I mean, clothing does contain a lot of chemicals.
Yeah. Like, and there is technically a little tag, but no one's really looking.
But that tag, but that, no, the tag doesn't
list the chemicals.
It just lists the fabric.
Yeah,
the fabric itself,
right.
like
right.
you touched on, like most of it is synthetic, derived from petroleum mm-hmm. byproducts.
Yeah.
But then on top of that, like what other chemicals right. are in the clothing that we're wearing every day?
Totally, the hidden chemicals that we're wearing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I mean, I couldn't tell you what the chemicals are because we don't use those chemicals.
Right.
But I would tell you that conventional dyeing processes, well, let's just work through it. Let's just pretend it was cotton, mm-hmm. not...
So starting off
with cotton, right. let's say it's conventionally grown cotton. 25% of the world's insecticides are used on cotton, on wow. growing cotton, just for scale, to understand that, right? So we use insecticides, we use pesticides on cotton. Then, as I was describing to you before we started this, if we're harvesting the cotton with a cotton picker, mm-hmm. right, not done by hand, but with a machine, we have to exfoliate. There's more chemicals that are put onto that cotton. So now we've got the cotton, we gin it, we spin it, and let's just say that we're going to yarn dye it conventionally. Well, we're going to use a ton of chemicals to yarn dye it. Then we're going to weave it. And now let's say we want to put a print on top of that. So now we're going to use something called discharge printing, which means we're going to put more chemicals onto that piece of cloth to remove the initial chemicals that dyed the yarn in that area, wow. just to add another set of chemicals to create new colors, right? And then we're going to put that on our skin. We're going to wash it a few times, but we're going to put that on our skin. I can't tell you what the names of those chemicals are because we don't use those chemicals in any of our processes.
We can also tell you that when you're using those chemicals, the people in those factories are in full hazmat suits.
Wow.
So that can give you an idea of what yeah. those chemicals are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've heard, I mean, I know flame retardant is sprayed on a lot of clothing. And
especially children's clothing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Children's pajamas, I mm-hmm. think, is a big one. So I always look for the big, like, neon tag that warns you about, yeah. you know, fire hazards. I'm like, okay, good. That's the one I want. The one that they say is going to put my child at risk for fire hazards because I know it wasn't sprayed with flame retardant.
It's crazy.
But looking into it, it's like these flame retardant companies lobbied these politicians hardcore to mandate laws that their product is sprayed on clothing. And I don't think very many lives are being saved by that. If yeah. any, I think way more people are being harmed sure. by these toxic chemicals.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know formaldehyde is another one that gets sprayed on clothing to give it these anti-wrinkle properties. PFAS, also known as forever chemicals, will provide clothing with like water resistance. And I used to work at Lululemon back in the day. I remember a man, older man, came in and he was asking me, like, do you guys have any organic clothing? And I was like, what? Like, I don't even think I had thought about organic right. clothing right. ever. Right. Like, I knew about organic food. But I was just kind of like, I don't know, maybe it's organic, I have no idea. And he was like, well, no, he started talking to me about the chemicals that the clothing is sprayed with and how yeah. it sits on your skin and yeah. it absorbs. I thought he was cuckoo at the time. And now I always think about this. I'm like, he was so right. This yeah. old man was like so ahead of his times, yeah. like 15 years ago, knowing all of this stuff about clothing. And yeah. I'm just now realizing it. Obviously, like, you want to strive towards
exactly.
finding like regenerative pieces and buying things from brands like yours. But I think like lower hanging fruit is like avoiding these anti-wrinkle, stain resistant clothing because you just know yeah. that they are just that's a right. chemical soup.
That's mm-hmm. right. Yeah, and I think like you start, you know, if you can, you start from the things closest to your body out, right?
Yeah.
Underwear, which yes. we're gonna be releasing our intimates collection. Fine. I'm actually, cool. we have a men's and women's. I'm wearing Amazing. Mine now, but
oh, that's super exciting.
Otis made scrap, so we had scrap farm to closet pointel, and he made boxers.
Wait, what's pointel?
What is pointel that? Is like a little kind of eyelet
oh, okay.
cotton. It's
okay,
a way yes. of weaving the I've cotton. Seen that. And he made his own pair, and I saw them in the closet. And I was like, "What? These are so cute!" And so I wore them one night, and then we were like, "Let's make underwear. We need yeah. to make underwear." So
that's so cool.
Yeah, I would say like start there, right? So for like cool. someone listening, right?
Yeah.
Like, hey. That start with your underwear, that's probably, you know, the most intimate thing you're going to be putting on your body
Absolutely.
And then work out from there. And I think it's like anything, like if we take the whole scale of it and we realize like how toxic everything is, we can freeze. It can put us in a freeze and that doesn't help us, right? So it's like little bits at a time, starting to just even ask the question, what am I wearing is incredibly powerful. Right, just to ask about that.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you think about food systems, right, like how many people wake up in the morning and drink a green juice? And of those people that are gonna wake up in the morning and drink a green juice, a large percentage of them are going to want that to be organic because they understand, oh, this is, you know, these are some important organs in my body. But almost nobody wakes up in the morning and says, like, I want organic clothing on my skin. And of those 0% that do that, 0% of those people say it better be regenerative, right? It's just, we're not there yet. And so giving ourselves a lot of grace, like we're in this soup. We're in the soup of like incredible chemical exposure. So
all of us,
we have to forgive ourselves and the systems that are in place.
And each other,
right, for that. And then we say, okay, like how do we begin to move our way out of it?
Yeah.
I think that's really the important part is understanding, okay, it's not healthy, it's not great, but it is where we are. Mm-hmm. And one step at a time, we find our way out. And it's through awareness and consciousness that we do that. You know?
Yeah, yeah. It can be overwhelming. And rather than be caught up in that overwhelm and freezing and maybe just pushing it aside and doing nothing, it's this process of making one change at a time, knowing that anything you do, you know, in the right, stepping in the right direction is going to make a difference.
Yeah.
And just kind of allowing yourself to go through that process at whatever pace you can.
Totally. Baby steps.
Yeah. Talk to us about the human impact of fast fashion. What does that look like for the individuals who are making fast fashion garments?
Oh my God. That's the gotta be the saddest part. Yeah. You know? Most of the time, in these factories where fast fashion is being sewn, it's close to slave labor. Oftentimes the dressmakers, they live on campus and they also purchase all their food from the same company.
Wow.
That's, you know, they provide all of it. And so they get let out on weekends, weekend day, a singular day.
They also get paid per piece that they make. So there's, you know, for them a demand to make more, they want to make more to receive more payments.
So they incentivize
bathroom break hours.
Yeah. Bathroom breaks, no food breaks.
Yeah, it gets really, I mean, even in Los Angeles, right, where you wouldn't say that's the capital of fast fashion, companies that make their things in Los Angeles oftentimes pay people by the piece.
Wow.
So we wouldn't label them as a fast fashion company, but what we see directly is that people skip their breaks, they don't use the bathroom because they're so being paid so poorly that they're like, we better maximize this.
It's just a natural result. Yeah.
And even like internally, like we started hiring more dressmakers when we started to grow. And Pedro, who runs our operations in the factory, we would bring people in to sew our dresses for Christiana. He had to retrain them on how to slow down.
Wow.
And how to train them to do 12 stitches per inch. And oftentimes, like a lot of them would leave because they would find it really frustrating to have to slow down. Because he was really like, no, like, let's take our time. Like, I want to show you that, like, you don't have to rush here. This is how we do it. And so that was really interesting when Pedro would talk to us about it. He's like, this is not normal for your average dressmaker in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's wild. Because I think a lot of times we see made in the USA and we think, okay, perfect.
Right.
Great, I'm not contributing to this corrupt industry, but it sounds like that's not always the case.
You'd be surprised. And there's a reason why the woman that we first worked with Christy Dawn, when we started, didn't want us to see where the clothes were being made.
Even though
that
was in
LA.
Yeah. Wow. What's the worst? Are there countries that are just known as like the worst for corruption and working conditions?
Obviously China doesn't have the greatest reputation.
Bangladesh, Vietnam.
And so, but I think like, rather than like even label which countries are the worst, I think it really comes down to relationships.
Yeah.
Right? Because there are great factories in China and there are great factories in Vietnam and there are great factories in Bangladesh. There's great factories in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And there's terrible factories.
Yeah.
In all of those places.
What propelled you from being this quasi-sustainable brand to a full-blown regenerative clothing company?
When we were using dead stock, it felt great. To be like, we're not part of the problem. Look, we're doing something that's good and we're not part of the problem. It felt really good. And after 5 years, that dopamine hit started wearing off, right? And as Christy explained, like, we looked at our children, like, what are we leaving our children? Are we leaving our children a desecrated landscape? And we're gonna say to them, well, we weren't part of that problem, guys. Is that what we're gonna say? Or are we gonna say like, no, we're gonna leave them something better.
You're correcting it.
And we're going to be part of the solution.
Yeah.
But before we can be part of the solution, we have to really identify what the problem is. And I'm not going to pretend like I know what the problem is for everybody, but for me and for Christy, when we really dug into it, we looked at what's happening out in the environment with the chemicals. We looked what's happening with the human beings. We looked at what's happening economically and socially. And we felt like these were all just symptoms. And so if these are just the symptoms, the root issue is intimacy. Is that as human beings, individuals, we've lost our connection with the earth, we've lost our connection with each other, and more importantly, we've lost our connection with ourselves. We've forgotten our own innate connection. And so to solve for all of these symptoms is to solve for intimacy. And so as a brand, how do we solve for intimacy? And where does our fabric come from? And how can we begin to forge a relationship with the earth? And how can we forge a relationship with the ones who tend her? And how can we forge a relationship with those who sew the dresses, right? And through those relationships, we can heal ourselves, each other, the earth. The whole web is contingent upon relationships. So if we find that the relationships are frayed, our work is to get intimate and to strengthen those bonds. And so that, to me, is what Christy Dawn is really doing, is that we're going intimate, we're going into relationship. And that is what we're offering our community. It's like when you're wearing that dress, that tells the story of a relationship with the earth, with the mycelia network, with the farmer, with the ginner, the weaver, the spinner, the dressmaker, the designer. And it's recognizing the interconnectedness and it's honoring every single connection there. And now you're wearing that frequency and you're not wearing all those chemicals, but you don't even need to know the names of those chemicals. You just have to know that you're connected. And that you're wearing that life force. And to me, like, that's, whoa, that's yeah. So beautiful.
It's taking things back to maybe not necessarily like local in the sense we think of it today, because I know like your farm is in India and we'll talk more about that, but a localized way of doing things where there is that connection.
That's
when there's so much separation now.
Typically
in the fashion world. Mm-hmm. So you guys were asking these questions. How did you stumble upon regenerative farming as being the answer? Because you started this process of becoming regenerative in 2019,
That's
I believe.
Right.
That was before regenerative was cool. Yeah. And before it was even being talked about on like a big scale, like it's starting to today. But how did you find out about that?
So in a former life, I played music poorly, but I played it. And
You've had a lot of former lives.
Yes. And one of the bands that I used to always play music with was a band called the Makepeace Brothers. And the lead singer in that band, his name's Finian Makepeace. He started an organization along with some other friends of ours called Kiss the Ground.
Yes.
In Venice, like it was just like around, like it started really simply like, hey, can we take these sidewalk grass paths and and can we grow things here? And like, and how do we treat the earth? And I remember him being on my Facebook feed and I kind of wasn't really paying attention. And then I started to pay attention a little more, like, what are these guys tripping out about? And they were like, oh, like we can solve some of these crises. It's through the soil. Mm-hmm. And so that started to land for me as I was asking this question of like, how do we get intimate?
Well, also we were like, I remember getting dressed one day after having Christy Dawn and realizing that I was wearing something that carried such heavy frequency in the garment. And you had just come home from Colombia and had like a pretty intensely beautiful ceremony and kept talking about this farm. And he said, I see our family on this farm. And it was like simultaneously while I was getting dressed and realizing that I was wearing like slave labor stitched into my clothing. And I was just like, where is this fabric coming from? And then the dead stock, the four stories of fabric, and he was talking about our family on a farm, and Otis looked at me in the kitchen and was just like, what if we started our own regenerative farm and grew our clothes? All of our clothes come from the earth. It's a fiber. We can grow our clothes. And of course, I'm like, you're crazy. How are we going to do this? Like, how are we actually going to do this? And then insert the Makepeace Brothers and...
It just all kind of collided.
It was crazy how it all just happened.
Very
it went from like this idea of like, let's start our own regenerative cotton farm to like a few months later, we had seeds in the ground in Erode, India.
But the story is very kismet. Like,
wow.
You have to tell the story of how, you know, we energetically, we said it out loud that we wanted to start a regenerative farm. And of course, I'm just like, how are we going to do that? But I trust him to make anything happen because that's just his nature, to bring things to life.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I think that's such a big part of starting anything. Like, just make, like, those ideas, I think, come to all of us.
Totally.
And those like deposits, right, in our mind, but it's the difference of just kind of brushing it off. Like, that sounds like a lot. I don't, mm-hmm, know how all the pieces are going to fit together yet.
Yeah.
I'm just going to like shelve it.
Yeah, yeah.
Versus like, no, this has been put into my brain for a reason. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to take the next step,
totally,
next action step that I can, whatever, yeah, that looks,
that's
like.
Right.
And it usually feels different, I will say. Like,
yeah,
there's like a different timbre to like, to an idea that you know is going to come to fruition.
Yeah.
It was one of those moments where you could feel like that tingly.
It just sat right.
Yeah.
In your gut.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of like the sheep. I was just,
exactly,
telling you, we just got this herd of sheep and we're going to use the wool to make lanolin to,
yeah,
put in a lip product. And I have no idea how to do it.
Exactly.
But we'll figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I think by the grace of God and effort, you put those two things together,
yeah,
and you can really bring it to life. And the story is quite amazing. I think you should tell everybody how,
yeah,
it happened.
So I come home from this ceremony and I tell Christy we're going to start our own regenerative cotton farm. And she's like, what on earth did you do in that ceremony? How are we going to do that? And I was like, I don't know. Let's see. So I got to the office and I started to Google regenerative cotton and nothing much came up. This is early, early 2019.
What was the ceremony?
It was a Yahe ceremony. So,
okay,
I was drinking in a ceremony with the folks from the Putumayo area of the Colombian Amazon.
Wow.
I get home, I'm in the office that morning, and I Google regenerative cotton, and there's really nothing. So I Google ethically grown cotton, and I find an NGO, and they're called the Responsible Sourcing Network, and I call them, and I say, hey, I have this vision of starting a regenerative cotton farm, can you help me? And they say, I'm sorry, we can't help you, we don't deal with that. But we're losing a little bit of funding and we have this employee who just started, we can't keep her. Maybe you want to meet with her. Maybe she can help you. She's fresh out of college. Her name's Maren Wilson. She drives down from Santa Cruz. She comes to the office. We sit down. I share with her the vision. We both talk about where this would make the most sense. And we both feel like India makes the most sense because not only can we grow it regeneratively, but there are all these systems that are already in place that have been in place for thousands of years, like plant dyeing and block printing and hand weaving, that we don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah.
We can do it there. So we both feel like India makes the most sense, which is a great, that we all feel like it makes the most sense, but how on earth are we gonna do it?
We make everything in LA. We're like, okay, we're going to India.
Big so, shit.
Yeah,
so that's just,
gonna happen.
We don't know where.
It's already
at
like regenerative farm.
Yeah.
Now we're going to India.
So I hire Maren. So Maren joins.
Wow.
So Maren calls Rebecca from Fibershed, which is an organization that supports and promotes local fiber sheds, and says, hey, I'm working with Christy Dawn. We want to do a regenerative farm in India. Can you help? And she says, I'm sorry, I don't have any relationships with anyone in India. 3 or 4 hours later, in a road, India, Nishant, who is the son of a man who owns a conventional textile company, is listening to this podcast that Rebecca had recorded months before. And he loves what Rebecca has to say about fiber sheds. And he guesses her email address and he says, hey, my name's Nishant. I want to start a carbon positive cotton farm, but I need a brand to partner with. I don't have the money to do it. Do you know anybody? And so, boom, here we are.
Wow.
Like, oh, cool. You want to do carbon?
This is 3 days.
A carbon positive, right. Carbon negative, whichever. I don't know exactly how to describe it.
That isn't like God lining things up for you guys. I don't know. Like, what is?
That's right. So we put together, we're like, let's try this regenerative thing. What's that? Let's figure it out. Let's, you know, really regenerative is really so land specific. So we go and he goes and finds 4 acres of land that Christy Don's going to lease. The idea is that we're going to pay for process. We're not paying for yield. And I think that's a really significant thing to talk about because typically brands pay for yield. If you can grow it, we'll pay for it. But we were saying, no. You don't know if you can grow it this way. We don't know if you can grow it this way. So we're actually going to pay to grow it this way. And there's a longer story to be had about the debt spirals that rural farmers are in all around the world because of the green revolution that started 40 years ago with pesticides and insecticides and fertilizers. But long story short is that we said, we're going to flip the bill. We're going to put the weight of that on our shoulders. We're not going to ask the farmers to carry that weight. And with 4 acres, it made sense. It wasn't that much of a capital outlay, but it was still absolutely insane to start our own regenerative cotton farm. And the 4 acres of land that we got were they were devoid of life and death. They weren't even, it wasn't dead land. It didn't have death in it. Death would have been great. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
We would have taken the dead land.
Wow.
So we model the whole thing out. Like, all right, this is what we think the best case scenario will be if it works.
That, like, this was just over a bunch of Zoom conversations with Nishant. Wow. This was just like an exploratory, every week let's meet and just like talk about what this may look like. And that's what I love about the regenerative like way or the systems. It's like you're constantly evolving and you're trying new things and you're learning from them. And like this farm, this specific farm that we started with was devoid of life and we had to till it, which normally you wouldn't. But in this mm-hmm. case, the land was like, please till me and put nutrients back into the soil.
Yeah.
Which I love because there's no like real linear, like direct way. It's like, ask the earth and she'll tell you. And it's been a really beautiful kind of reminder
that's that right.
we're in relationship with the earth and with each other. And it's been, that's been at the forefront of this project.
Yeah.
Is let's explore together. Let's explore with the earth and see what, you know, she has to tell us. And
what the farmers have to tell
yeah,
us.
And it was a true, like,
being
test
intuitive
of intimacy.
About it. Yeah.
You know, like, it started there with that.
So what else does that look like for you guys at your regenerative farm? Because I know regenerative can look different depending on what's being grown or raised. But what yeah. makes your farm regenerative?
Well, so, you know, first and foremost, I think it's what she's describing, is that you're in a state of constant improvement, right? Mm-hmm. Like, things are constantly getting better. So you're listening and you're trying things. We have cover crops, we do chop and drop, we have pollinator strips, we have
juice, like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just for people who are watching who may not understand the significance of all of that, like, let's contrast that with a big monocrop cotton farm where
right.
the same crop is just grown constantly on right. the same plot of soil until the soil becomes super depleted of any nutrients.
That's right.
And then pesticides, herbicides are heavily right. sprayed. So this is actually farming in a way that restores the health and the biodiversity
right.
of the soil.
Yeah. So when we went to visit when we first started, and Kupasami and Eshwari had been living on that land that we leased.
They're the matriarch
for 50 years.
The patriarch of the okay. land.
Eshwari wow. is the wife, and Kupasami is the husband. And I asked Eshwari, I said, "Tell me about farming this way," because the land had been farmed conventionally for 40 years.
What was it, sugarcane prior?
Yeah, it's sugarcane and sesame okay. and. Anyway, so I asked her, I said, like, tell me what the difference is doing it this. Is it working? How does it feel for you? And she said to me, she said, first of all, she said, it's not nearly as hot on the land anymore. Because when you farm with chemicals, it creates a whole lot of heat.
I bet, yeah.
She said, I don't have sores on my arms and my legs anymore when I walk through the fields.
Wow.
And then she said to me, this is like the most impactful thing that she said. She said, and as far as the earth, you don't have to ask if the earth is happy. Just look around. The dragonflies are back. The earthworms have returned. The earth is happy. And for me, that was like, oh my God, this is working.
For
right?
me too.
So for anyone that isn't familiar with the significance of sequestering carbon from the atmosphere, tell us the significance of that.
Yeah. So, you know, carbon in the atmosphere can be really dangerous and it can create a warming effect on the planet, or it can create climate change, not necessarily just warming. But carbon in the soil is incredible, right? It means that you have incredible biodiversity, you have root systems. And so as the soil has become more and more depleted, the carbon has moved from the soil out into the atmosphere. And so everyone's like, oh my God, climate change. Totally a natural reaction. And it seems helpless, right? But wildly, the soil is incredibly resilient and forgiving. And we can move that carbon back from the atmosphere down into the soil. It's called carbon sequestration. And we do that through regenerative practices, not just with growing cotton, through any regenerative practice to growing anything else, but really it's building the organic content in the soil, which all of our bodies are made of carbon, and any life uses carbon. And so by doing that, you reduce the carbon in the atmosphere, you pull it back down in the soil. And it also allows the soil to become more of a soil sponge. So you create water tables. It's incredibly impactful. And it's just one marker for a healthy system. And it's actually a marker that's more scientific than it is kind of where I stand, which is more on the hippy dippy vibe, but it's a really important marker. And it's something that we've done, I think, quite well on our land.
Yeah, we always say with the livestock that we raise at Primal Pastures regeneratively, like 100 years ago, it just would have been called farming, you know?
That's right.
Now, with the factory farming of livestock and the monocrops of a lot of the plants that we eat, things are just so backwards and are really contributing to a less healthy planet. And I think it's interesting that cows often get blamed for this, when really it's like how the cows are being raised, and also so many other things, by the way. But when we raise things in a regenerative way, it really truly does like restore the health of the soil, which is it's everything for the health of the planet.
It's basically how our ancestors used to farm.
We're just hedging over 3 million pounds of carbon have been sequestered from our farms. From I think we've done now 320 acres all in over the course of 5 years.
That's insane.
Yeah, so it's working. And, you know, we're a really relatively small company. We're no H&M, we're no Zara. And the way that we designed the whole project is we did it open source. So none of what we're doing is proprietary. In fact, if any brand wants to go reach out to Nishanth right now and take acres with him, they are totally capable of doing
it. We have a lot of brands that reach out and ask to buy our yield of regenerative cotton, and we're like, actually, here's our partner's information. You can go straight to him, and like we really recommend getting an acre or two if you can.
Has anyone?
A few have. Few were like, "What are you even talking?"
I think right now, year we're responsible for 80 acres.
Okay.
And I think in total, I think Nishanth is managing about 400 plus acres for the year.
Wow.
So there's other brands that are getting involved, and the thing about it, like from a business point of view, is typically if you were to source your cotton from the global commodity market, you can finance it and you can get, you know, terms that you're usually to market before you're paying for it. We have a year from the time we pay for the first seed in the ground to when we can bring it to market. So it brings additional challenges with it. And one of the ways that we figured out how to kind of adjust for that is, like I said to you early on, we were like, wait, the farmers can't be asked to carry this weight all on their own. As a brand, we're going to put it on our shoulders. Mm-hmm. But then what we realized, like, oh my God, we can't carry this either. So then I'm thinking about like a table, right? Like if you have a table with four legs, you're moving that weight across, or you're sharing that across four legs. What's the way to lighten the load on our shoulders is like, oh my God, our community. Our mycelia network of human beings.
Wait, can we do a quick explanation on mycelia? Because I wasn't familiar with this term and you told me about it before we started recording.
Yes.
But it's really cool.
Yes.
Quick snapshot.
I mean, I don't want to like ruin this. Some scientist is going to be like, that's not what it is exactly. But basically the mycelia network in the soil is this network of little hairs, fungi, that are sharing information across vast spaces. And so when you till land, you
disrupt
that mycelia network. But what's amazing is that if you have a grove of trees and then you have a pestilence come in, what scientists have discovered is that if the first tree, right when that first tree is experiencing this pestilence, the trees all the way at the other side of the grove are now releasing certain chemicals and enzymes to prepare and prevent those pests from ruining them. And that is all because of the mycelia network. So there's this intelligence under the ground that's speaking all the time. And it's a wisdom that's shared between the plants that's really, really, really beautiful.
So amazing. Okay, thank you. I didn't mean to derail you.
No, it's fine. But what I was trying to say is that what you find is that the more you can share the weight, no one has to be the hero. If everyone takes a little bit, no one has to be the martyr. And so we asked our community and we said, hey, listen, we want to take 40 acres of land that we're going to commit to 40 acres during this 6-month growing period. We would like to invite you to support us in that. And so basically it's called the land stewardship. And so our community can steward for $200, which is about the cost of our dawn dress. They can steward about 3,500 square feet of farmland. And what it is, they pay $200 up front. And at the end of the season, we say, hey, this is the price we're going to pay you back for the cotton that grows on your square footage. We pay back our stewards in the form of store credit. And with any regenerative system, things tend to get better and better. So every season we've done this, people have gotten back more than $200 in store credit.
Wow.
And so it really helps us manage the cash flow.
Yeah.
But it helps regenerate the land. And now it's not just on our shoulders.
Yeah.
And now
even
it's
more connection.
That's right.
The clothing that,
that's
that you
right.
wear.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Anyways, that's kind of like, that's the story of what Christy Dawn, how we got here.
Yeah.
And why we got here and why we did it.
I love just at every level how much better regenerative clothing is for the people that, that are growing it on the farms. And you mentioned like the woman like not getting the sores anymore that she used to get when they were growing conventional cotton. Like, how amazing. And then so much better for the people producing it and the working conditions. Like, talk to me a little bit about the people that sew Christy Dawn clothing. I know that their wages are a lot higher than a typical person working in the clothing industry. Mm-hmm. What does that look like?
Yeah, we have a factory here in LA. Well, I guess it's not here. We're in Murrieta. But in downtown, yeah, in downtown LA, we have a factory there where everyone there gets a living wage. And we also have health benefits and paid time off. So, you know, for us, it's like that's the only way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we've always done for our team here in LA. Also, really sweet little story, our sewers in LA, they all wear Christy Dawn.
Wow.
So people that come in to like have an interview or whoever is coming in that we're meeting with, they're like, first they walk in and they're just like, what is happening? Like, everyone's smiling and laughing and this does not look like your average factory. And then everyone's wearing Christy Dawn. It's
That's
super sweet for me.
It's not mandatory.
Yeah, not at all.
Not like we force them to. No, like these.
They're proud to.
No, yeah, our sellers love to wear. Chris, yeah, they love to wear so the dresses good. That they're making.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
really cool. Talk to me about what you use to dye your clothing, because I know that's radically different than how most clothing is dyed.
Yeah. Yeah. This is my favorite part about, well, one of my favorite parts about what we do. So we use a lot of plant dyes, and a lot of the flowers and the plants are so beautiful. You can get such a different range of color. Some of my favorites are turmeric, and then there's like little recipes basically for each color. So when we went to India, we went to a natural dye house, and it was basically the kitchen of this man who has worked with these plants for, I think he said 20 years. And before he lets anyone come into the kitchen to create these recipes with him, they have to spend like 4 years with him in the woods, like identifying the plants, working with the plants. It was so special. And when you look around, he has all these little recipe cards as if you're cooking something, and these big pots to create these really just vibrant, like so beautiful colors. But you'll see some things in the kitchen were turmeric. There's a flower, I believe it's called Clitoria or Clitora. We use a lot of roses, lots of flowers, marigolds. We use rusted nails. There's this process of releasing this like black color by using rusty old nails, which
That's
is
wild.
So funny. And yeah, it's just like it's so many different colors that you can get from using the beautiful things that the earth creates.
That is so cool.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can get like 5 different ranges. And indigo, we use a lot of indigo and madder root and the blues and the indigo. It's like, I'm not wearing, like this is indigo. Mm. This is like the last shade of indigo. And it just, you would just hold the cotton in the vat for much longer than you would like the light blue.
Yeah. Wow, so these like ancient traditions that they're using and keeping track of, like you mentioned, with the different recipes, like so much wisdom and intention goes
into
that. It's
a whole recipe card. It's like this much turmeric and then this much sesame oil and then how long you leave it in the pot for. It's really so beautiful and intentional.
Really cool.
And old. Like, this is old wisdom that they carry.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And I would imagine takes so much more time.
So much more time. I mean, those dresses that we make that are all, we usually do block printed and vegetable dyed pieces because it just feels so intentional to do both of them. But those dresses always take so much longer or are either very late on our production schedule.
Yeah.
But it's fine. It's so worth it because it's
And
you're
then
wearing.
Each one is unique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that's the other thing. Like oftentimes on the design team, we will approve one shade of color, and this is 6 months before it comes to life, where we can sell it and shoot the product. But we'll approve like a light blue, and then we get it, and Nishant, our partner, is like, sorry, there was a sandstorm and there's little spots all over, and the shade is like, you know, five times different, either darker or lighter. And you're just like, okay, cool, we'll tell that story. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes we have to share, like, this is what was happening in that part of India when they were dyeing this fabric, and there was a sandstorm that came through, so that's why there's all these little dots everywhere, and like, you're wearing the energetics of a sandstorm.
Yeah, what a cool story to tell.
It's very cool.
To have that information about the clothing that you're wearing.
Totally.
It's so rare.
And it keeps us like really in the moment as well. I think, you know, on the design side, you can get really used to like, you fall in love with the thing you originally designed. And when you're working with the natural elements, you're actually in the flow of what will come. And it's also this beautiful surprise that you're like really excited to see. So now we know with block prints and vegetable dyes, we're like, we approve this color, but it might be five shades lighter or five shades darker.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I read preparing for this interview that polyester has a frequency of 15 hertz, which is equivalent to a dead or dying person.
Yeah.
And I, you know, this is very new for me to dive into the frequency of clothing. It may sound really out there to a lot of people, but I truly believe there's something to it. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about the frequency of regeneratively raised clothing and natural fibers in general, and how that differs from synthetic fibers.
Gosh, I mean, I don't have any data to support this, and I think it would be so fun for us to actually figure out a way to do that with our fabric. For me, it's really how I feel when I'm wearing it, and I'm lucky enough to wear a lot of regenerative clothing, so now when I do wear something that is not, I'm such a sensitive, subtle being that I can really tune into the feeling of putting on a garment that doesn't have a regenerative quality. I guess I could just share with you the things that I feel like, you know, it's similar to when we take our shoes off and we come out here and we ground.
Yeah.
It's kind of the similar feeling when you're putting a regenerative piece on your body. It's the largest, the skin is the largest organ of our body, and we're absorbing so much of the actual frequency of not only the cotton, but the energetics that go into making the garment.
I think all of that does translate on some level, like the energy of the humans that were making your clothing, like.
That's right.
And has you feel to be passed it. On right. some level.
Like, you feel it when you're hanging out with someone and they're really negative, right? And you're like, I'm just like totally slumping into this feeling. And when you hang out with someone who's really positive and beautiful and, you know, you can feel the difference. And I would say that our clothing has a very similar feeling if you are able to tune into it.
Yeah.
And we live in a really fast-paced world. It's hard to like get dressed consciously every day and actually tune into what you're wearing. But maybe try it next time and see how it feels, because you might really not be able to turn away when you get dressed.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, the silk too that you mentioned. So I also read that silk has a lower frequency. Yeah. And you mentioned that's because like silkworms actually...
Yeah, you have to kill the silkworms.
Die in the process, but then there's something called peace silk. I thought you were saying pea silk.
Yeah, it's like peace and love.
Silk, where the silkworms don't die. And the frequency is a lot higher.
Yeah.
And Aris, I think you said linen is like 500 hertz.
Yeah.
Which is a totally natural fiber.
Yeah,
so
linen and wool.
So fascinating.
When you shear your sheep.
Mm-hmm. Make a coat.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think after sitting with you, I think we're going to go figure out how to measure the hertz of what we're making.
Yeah, you've got to do it.
But I think you can kind of intuitively just look and say like, wait a second, do I want to wear slavery?
Yeah.
Do I want to wear extraction, right? Like, no, like, I mean, same thing with like diamonds, right? Like now people are like, oh, blood diamonds, and it just doesn't feel as good. Forget science. Like, oh, I don't want to be associated with those things, but now we're wearing it, right? And so I think all of it, to put it all in perspective, is like the purpose of Christy Dawn on the surface appears to be, and we thought we started a clothing company, but I think now we've kind of reframed that for ourselves, is that like clothing is the Trojan horse. And our hope is that when people buy Christy Dawn, when people wear Christy Dawn, that it invites in them a level of inquiry that maybe it wasn't there before. Because when I look at the world and I see what's going on, my heart hurts sometimes. And not just what's going on externally, sometimes internally too. And I see this like, almost this like, forgetting the connection, forgetting who I am, forgetting who we are. And the anecdote to that is presence, right? And so like, if clothing can be an avenue for people to actually just take a moment of like, wait, what am I wearing? Oh, wait, this was grown in a road India, right? Like by a farmer over there who's now energetic is here with me. If we can begin to remember those things, really Christy Dawn is in the business of shifting consciousness little by little by little by little. And we do it by wearing beautiful things. And that's such a gift and such a privilege to do that. But there's a shirt that we have, a t-shirt on the back. It says, we are the regeneration. So sometimes we think about healing as being external or regeneration happening outside of us on the farm. Mm-hmm. But like quite literally, if we looked at the earth as an entire system, and then we looked at ourselves as part of that system, why on earth are we incarnating right now in this time where things are so seemingly in flux? Oh my goodness, maybe we are the regeneration that's being invited into happen. But the only way to do that is to actually come into our own presence. And so the dresses and the t-shirts and the underwear,
it's
an invitation.
Yeah, it's an opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that's kind of how I look at it, at least. Maybe Christy's not tripping like I am, but that's where I'm at.
I'm tripping like he is.
You're both tripping.
Yeah, we're both tripping.
You're on the same page. I think it's so cool what you guys are doing. And I think that there's going to be more and more awareness in this area in the coming years. You know, we're seeing it happening with big food, big pharma. And I feel like big fashion is next. There's a lot of powers that be that are trying to keep us from That's going right. there. That's I right. think like yeah. Christy and I were just talking about how even these like fashion publications that we all see, it's like they are funded by the ads from these big fashion companies, similar to how food companies are funding the regulations of all of these associations, American Heart Association, you know,
That's right.
there's it's all kind of corrupt and, yeah. and broken.
Yeah.
And I don't think I think fashion is something that has been like easy for us to feel disconnected from and brush off. But when the awareness is there, there's going to be more change, I think.
It becomes an heirloom piece.
That's right.
And we get that feedback so often from our community that mothers or grandmothers or not, they're like, I'm saving this for my future child, or I'm gonna give this to my granddaughter.
I love that.
And that's like
it was back in the day.
Exactly. Yeah. Like it becomes this really cherished heirloom piece.
Like I could see this dress being passed down from generation to generation to generation
yeah.
and never going out of style.
And that's the goal. Like when I'm designing, that's the goal. And you know, we don't follow trends. I think that's a really like important part of this conversation too. Like when you're not following a trend, it becomes a timeless piece. You can wear it for so long. Like our Dawn dress, it is the first dress that I ever designed, and to this day is our best selling dress. And that was 10 years ago. And that speaks volumes to the design, the designs itself. And I just think that's so cool, because if you were to look at, you know, a Forever 21 or a Zara, like you're not wearing the thing that they made 10
no.
years ago.
No.
So the intention is followed through.
So when you come to market with regenerative clothing, how was that received by the general public?
So we're so excited, you know, like she wants to make beautiful dresses. I want to make rent. And now we're like, oh my God, we're going to make a difference in the world. We can't wait. We're so excited. It's working. And we come to market and we are beating the drum of regeneration.
We launch Farm to Closet Collection.
We call it the Farm to Closet Collection, and we talk about regenerative.
We're like, this is genius. This is awesome.
People are going to love that.
Yeah,
people
I can't gonna wait. Everyone's going to stop and pause and take note, you know? Yeah. And I think, you know, first of all, let's be honest, regeneration, that's a scary word. Like that sounds really scientific, and there's a, like, what does that even mean if you don't know what it means already? But we didn't think about that. We just kept saying like, these dresses are regenerative, and no one gave a hoot.
This dress heals the earth. This dress drew X amount of carbon from the sky.
And crickets.
Yeah. Nobody cared.
It wasn't crickets, but it was definitely not.
It was at least a cricket.
A few of them.
Yeah.
A few trips.
Yeah, exactly.
And people just didn't respond the way we had hoped. Maybe we were too far around the curve. Maybe it was too complex of an idea. Maybe it was that buying habits right now in this disposable world are actually really selfish. That for somebody to buy something, they're not buying it because it's good for the world. They're buying it because they want to feel good. They want to look good, or they want to feel something. And so when we recognize that, we realize that we had to compete on the same playing field that the fast fashion companies are, which are they're competing to make people feel good, even if it's just for a fleeting moment, right? And so we had to let people know, hey, you're going to feel really good in this dress. You're going to look really good in this dress. And if we're going to talk about the benefits to the earth, before we can do that, we have to talk about the benefits to you as a consumer. And then over time, once we get you in our ecosystem, we eventually slow drip you the story of regeneration. It's something that we allow you to discover on your own. And when you get to that point, then you're ready for it. Then you become a lifelong either Christy Dawn customer or just a customer of regeneration, or just a, you recognize your own innate connection. And that's really kind of what we've come to.
Yeah. So instead of leading with regenerative farm to closet, carbon sequestration, we realized very quickly that that's not the way that the customer is going to fall in love with this collection. It's really getting the dress or the piece in their hands, on their body, have them fall in love with the garment and how they feel while they're wearing it, and then let the regeneration and the farm to closet really speak for itself. And that's been the experience now that we've kind of like taken our foot off the gas around preaching what we're doing because we were so passionate about it. We're realizing that actually our customer is really passionate about it too, when you just let it like land very authentically on their body.
I do this with my husband. I let him, I kind of plant seeds and let him discover something on his own. And then he's more about that, you know, whatever those seeds I'm trying to plant are, when he discovers it, it's kind of like you're doing the same thing.
Exactly.
Same strategy.
Yeah, exactly. But we were so passionate about it that we wanted that to be, you know, the messaging right off the bat. But yeah, I think it was intimidating and I understand why. Mm-hmm. Not everyone knows and
not everyone's ready for it.
Yeah, exactly. And then when they realize it, or they see the, you know, beautiful like piece of paper that we put in the order, and they read about it after they've put it on, then it starts to land for them.
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. And I think what's also wild is that recently we, Loyola Marymount is a university down in Los Angeles, and their marketing school, they did a class on Christy Dawn.
Wow.
And in part of their research, they started to research that generation of people and their relationship to the word sustainability. Hmm. And it was actually a four-letter word for them. Hmm. Because everything had been greenwashed so much that people stopped, these younger generations, like, we don't believe you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really wild reality that we're facing, is that marketing for these conventional methods has gotten so good that they have blurred the lines between what's beneficial and what's not. And this younger generation coming up, they don't know what to believe. So if you're going to say it's good, they're going to assume it's not.
Yeah, it's like a red flag.
That's right. And they kind of want to discover it for themselves. And so we've had to, not that we cater to the younger generation necessarily. I think our demographic is a little bit older, but recognizing like there is an innate intelligence in people, and trust that and feed it in little bits and let them get to where they need to get to.
So interesting. Okay, I know we're short on time, so I'm going to start closing us out. Christy, you recently posted about how you started eating meat again on social media. What led to that decision, and how has that been for you?
So it's been fairly new, my meat eating journey.
Were you a vegetarian or vegan?
I started as a vegan, and then when I became pregnant, became more of like a pescatarian. And for me, initially, it started, we had a spiritual teacher that we worked with for many years. And basically, like my first few sessions with him, he was like, we're going to break this pattern through your eating habits. And I'm going to take all this stuff away and just see what comes up. And in that process, I did a lot of research around, you know, how the animals were treated in the process to eat the meat, and became very sensitive to the energetics of the meat that I was putting in my body, and was just like pretty repulsed by that.
By conventional.
Yeah, exactly.
Factory farming.
Yeah, exactly. And it was 14 years that I didn't eat any meat, and I'd have fish occasionally. And you know, my body is actually the reason why I started eating meat again. Like, I'm pretty low on iron and magnesium, and my blood work is just like asking for real whole protein meat. And so it's been about 6 months now, and so far I feel a lot better. It's definitely, it's a journey of healing, but I'm hopeful, and I really am just like honoring the animal. Obviously, we're only eating, you know, regenerative meat. I still haven't really dabbled with certain meats, but I will say my body is craving more and more of it.
Have you guys ordered from Primal Pastures yet?
No.
Okay, you've got to place an order.
Okay.
The cleanest meat in America.
Okay.
Amazing. Okay, we will.
Yeah, you'll love it.
Yeah, but it's been really nourishing. And I find that like I'm so much more full. I have more energy through the day. I'm sleeping better. It's been positive all around. It's just like now getting used to the textures in my mouth.
Yeah, it's an adjustment.
Yeah.
Question for both of you. What makes you feel the most grounded?
Well, for me, I would just say my personal metaphysical practice is like where even there's some days where I'm like, I don't want to do this. And then I go do it. And I'm like, thank God I did that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Love it. Yeah. I would say similar. My practice, my devotion to the divine, to God, and being anywhere in nature. I mean, this feels so grounding. It's like the immediate grounding is when I'm at the beach or closest to the redwoods or the oak trees. And
yes,
yeah,
it's a,
yeah, or the yeah, cottonwoods
or under
here.
Cottonwood.
Exactly.
Love it. Well, thank you both so much for being here. It's been awesome just chatting with you guys on and off air, and really appreciate you making the drive. Where can people follow along with you and buy your amazing line of clothing?
Yeah, ChristyDawn.com. Our Instagram is ChristyDawn. Yeah, ChristyDawn. That's pretty much it.